Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Body Slam Podcast right here at GERWECK.net. That is GERWECK.net. I am Atlee Green, and I'm with my special co-host, Jason Labonte. Jason, talk to him.
Hey, how you doing, Atlee?
I'm doing good. Christmas is coming and gone. New Year's is right around the corner. How was your Christmas?
I had a fantastic Christmas. Got to spend time with the family, got to see my nephews. You know, they're, my nephews are 6 and 3. Christmas is just awesome to watch them tear through the presents. Got to spend time with my nieces, who are a lot older than that. And I actually got to meet my girls' family. So it was a really good holiday. How was yours?
It was very relaxing. We run around all the time during Christmas. You know, I go to my brother's house, go to my sister-in-law's house, various other friends and family. So the wife and I decided we're just going to have a nice, relaxing Christmas at home. But one thing I noticed that I'm not bothered by, but I found it intriguing, I had a restless Christmas.
Really?
Yeah, a restless Christmas. What I mean by that is I didn't get a single wrestling item for Christmas.
Wow, I can't even claim that.
Now, let me explain. Usually, whether it's the holiday Secret Santa or Yankee Swap or whatever it is, I always end up with a wrestling gift or two because I'm known as the wrestling guy in my circle of friends and family, so when in doubt, buy Atlee a wrestling gift. And it took me a few days to realize this, but I was like, wow, there's nothing WWF or WWE labeled under my tree.
Wow.
And it was crazy. It's like, and I took it, maybe it's some weird sign that I've grown up. I don't know. Probably not. But I wrote a blog about it at thegreenscreen.net, so check it out. But I heard you spoke to a former WWE champion.
Oh yes, I had. I follow Stone Cold Steve Austin on Twitter. I listen to his podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, and he sent out a tweet. I'm taking calls today. I'll be sending my number out. I went, and it was thankfully a very slow day at work. He tweeted that number, and for the next half hour, I was hitting redial and hang up for about almost a half an hour straight, and I got to talk to the man.
You talked to the Texas Rattlesnake himself.
Oh, now, hell yeah.
Now, I'm going to plan on listening to this podcast because you are on it. But what did you ask? Give me a sneak peek. Give me a question that you asked him.
Well, I'm not going to go into spoilers. I'm not going to tell you what he said. But I asked him. I was actually able to get 3 questions off because it was only a limited amount of time that I could speak with him. And I asked him about. Who had the stiffest ring he ever took a bump in? I don't know about you. I've actually done some training in the at the time when I was an independent wrestler here in New England. I actually did a little bit of training in Killer Kowalski's ring, and I got to tell you, that was like bumping on concrete. So I was just kind of curious, you know. And then I ended up working in an ECW ring where the bump was, I was almost trampoline like. So I was kind of curious, you know, he's got the more worldwide experience. Who had the stiffest ring? And then I followed that up. I asked him about a movie that I recently picked up on DVD called Knockout, in which he is a retired boxer, of all things. And he sees this rather nerdly kid who's getting bullied, prove himself by trying out for his high school's boxing team. And Stone Cold takes him under his wing and shows him how to box. Well, in all of my reading of Mr. Austin's history, I don't remember seeing boxing as one of his activities. So I was curious as to what kind of training he needed before he got down to filming. And his answer was rather fascinating.
Okay, well, don't spoil that because I want to listen to it. I'm sure our listeners want to listen to it. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of our show today, I do want to mention that currently at GERWECK.net, The Gerwick.net Year-End Awards 2014 are currently, you can currently vote for them online at the website. And two questions are currently on the website, and I'm really perplexed as to the result of one of them. As this podcast is going right now, there's two questions. Number one, you can vote for the pay-per-view / special event of the year. And currently, NXT Our Evolution TakeOver is currently winning with 36% of the votes as events of the year. Other events in that category are WrestleMania 30, Ring of Honor Best of the World, New Japan's G1 Climax, Survivor Series. List goes on and on. Definitely check it out. But right now, currently, and I'm hitting the refresh button just to make sure I'm up to date with these results, but Promotion of the Year is currently being won by TNA. You did not hear that? Yes. This may be a troll job by our fans at GoWork.net. If so, please stop. Just please stop. But right now, TNA is winning with 35% of the votes. NXT is in second place with 24% of the vote. Ring of Honor is in third place with 20% of the vote. And WWE is in fourth place for 11% of the vote. You got other promotions in the mix. You got Lucha Underground, New Japan, Chikara, Dragon Gate, Noah, Shimmer, all sorts of good stuff. But the fact that TNA is Promotion of the Year. Now, granted, even though I'm not a TNA fan, they did do some good stuff at the very end of the year, but, or I should say the end of October and November. But again, they call them Promotion of the Year, we ludicrous, but hey, if the fans truly believe TNA's Promotion of the Year, we gotta respect it. If it's a troll job, again, please stop.
I mean, granted, the last 4 months, once they started the New York tapings, to the time where effectively TNA on TNN or Spike, how's that for a flashback? they put on some excellent shows. I mean, the wrestling was just absolutely was fantastic. Bobby Lashley as defending champion was a very credible champion, much better than people would have thought. Bobby Roode's quest for the title was an amazing story. The triangle series between the Hardys, the Dudleys, or Team 3D, and the Wolves was.
Are you trying to get sued?
I think I'm just in old school mode tonight.
Okay.
Which I suppose is just about every night. I mean that series was just absolutely fantastic, but just the rest of the year, no. It's. I can't give a company a year-round vote for just, like, 2 months.
I completely agree with you. And just to talk about the good stuff they did at the end of the year, I put Lashley Roode 1. That's actually one of my top five favorite matches of 2014.
Oh, it told a fantastic story. It drew me in. And it takes a lot for a match to draw me in.
I mean, we're going to get a lot more into TNA as the show goes on, but I do want to start off with Raw this past Monday night, the last episode of Monday Night Raw for the year 2014. Jason, let's break it down, my friend.
Break it down. It was the first thing that caught my attention was the fact that Jerry Lawler made it a point to say that Christian was a retired world champion. I had heard he had been dealing with a lot of concussions recently, but I had not heard that he had been forced into retirement.
That is correct. During the opening for Monday Night Raw, EMC Reunion, Edge and Christian did their five-second pose, popped the crowd. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar come out to spoil the party. Heyman makes reference to Edge's broken neck, also makes reference to Christian, you know, and his concussion has to retire. Lawler made the reference earlier in the night as well. So it does appear that Christian is retired, can no longer wrestle. That was kind of a weird way to announce it. I mean, I know not every wrestler can get the Edge, Daniel Bryan, you know, announcement speech, but
well, it just
kind
it
of
just,
a weird way to announce it. They talked about it as if everyone knew, and it's like, what? This is news to us.
It goes to show the level of respect that Christian has gained with Vince from the days where Vince wanted to promote him by having a blue dot in front of his face whenever he wrestled, which sadly is a true story, to the fact that when they finally put the world title on him, they took it off within 48 hours. And, you know, they just never used him to his full potential. You know, I mean, he wasn't Captain Charisma because he wasn't good. And this just shows, you know, what Vince thought of him, I think.
No, I agree, because when you look at Christian, definitely an excellent performer. You can't say he was in a bad match.
No.
Bad matches happen sometimes with all the greats, but he was always highly entertaining. But it also, to speak to your point, Jason, it goes to show you that, you know, some people cannot get over that hump of Vince McMahon thinking that you're this, that, and the other. I mean, the bottom line is, if Vince thinks you're at a certain level, unless you can go on a run like Austin or Hogan, you're not going to change his mind.
I mean, even Daniel Bryan is still fighting that fight, and we'll see exactly how well that fight goes once Daniel Bryan's next step happens to hit. But, you know, Christian, I'm very sorry to see you go. One of the best workers, most underrated, underutilized workers, and I really hope that I hope that he is a first ballot Hall of Fame. I think he deserves it.
After the Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar segment, of course, at the end of the segment, John Cena came out, attacked Heyman, Lesnar attacked Cena. Cena put him in the AA, but Lesnar just kind of got pounded out of the ring before he could get hit with it. And that kind of sets up things to come for the evening. But the first match of the evening was a champion versus champion match. The Intercontinental Champion Dolph Ziggler taking on the U.S. Champion in Rusev. Jason, what did you think of the match?
Ziggler is absolutely on fire. He cannot have a bad match. I think he could actually have a good match with an army sack filled with boxing equipment, and I think you might catch that reference from years past. But I was so afraid that he was going to once again tap out to the accolade. To see how the match ended with the disqualification, I mean, that surprised me, but I think this is a match that never should have happened.
I do agree with you. It's a match that never should have happened because I think if you're trying to have Rusev stomp somebody out, I think you can do that with somebody else besides Dolph Ziggler. Now, granted, there's two schools of thought on this, because if not Dolph Ziggler, then who? Like, who are the people really going to be upset with that Rusev is stomping him out? I mean, we're talking about it right here. Now, if Rusev stomped out, let's say, Justin Gabriel or Kofi Kingston, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But, okay, you know, as expected. But I don't think the match should have happened. But at least I like how it was booked strong, where it was competitive enough back and forth with the slight edge to Rusev. And then just when Dolph Ziggler was going to start turning things around, you know, Rusev kind of goes cheap, holds the ropes, won't stop kicking, won't listen to the referee, gets disqualified, which leads Ryback to come into the ring and kind of clean house, helps Ziggler up, and then goes to this long promo, which kind of, you know, highlights and chronicles, you know, the rise of Ryback. What did you think about that? Because Ryback's never done a long promo like that before.
This was something that, considering the damage that was done to the character, a lot of which, from my understanding, was Ryback's own fault. They really needed to put a little back history to him to make him seem a little bit more credible. I mean, his time in Rybacksel and that whole failed, miserable heel turn, there was a lot of damage done there. And even when they did that, the lead up to Survivor Series, where he actually turned heel for an evening, I really think that Ryback, they still need to work on rebuilding him to get him to that upper echelon. So far, it's been they've done a pretty decent job, with the exception of said Survivor Series moment. But, you know, we need a little bit more in depth on him. We've got to believe in him. We've got to have a reason to believe in him. And I thought that the only thing I think would have made that better was if it was a sit-down with Jim Ross.
I mean, the way I look at it, when he first started talking and they started showing the video clips, there were a few fans chanting, what, every single time he paused. But that ended very quick, which told me that, okay, he actually has the fans' attention. And it got better and better as the interview went on. But then at the very end, he went from serious, realistic, this is my journey, to I'm going to eat you because I take negative things and put them in the pit of my stomach. And then I'm going to say, feed me more. Now, obviously the promo had to end with feed me more because that's his catchphrase. But it took me out of this serious, great moment.
No, I agree. It, got to build off of the negatives, and you know he's still getting fed with negatives. I mean that's something I should have asked Stone Cold about, was whether or not he regrets that what chant. It seemed forced. The whole thing, I mean, it was good, it was needed, but it seemed forced.
It definitely was forced because it seemed out of place when it first happened, but as it was happening, I liked it. I did like what we saw. It was just the ending really just took me out of it.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Like 90% of this is good, and the last 10% was just, you know, oh, man, like fake pro wrestling. You know, that's kind of how it came across. Also, we got to talk about Cesaro.
Don't get me started on him. Talk about a waste of talent.
Okay, now I gotta say we gotta go back to what we're referring to, the infamous Steve Austin podcast on the WWE Network, where Vince McMahon said that Cesaro isn't connected with the audience. He doesn't have it. Now, Grant, Cesaro is a very talented individual between the three ropes, not the four ropes, but he did himself no favors with that promo.
No, that especially that four ropes bit. Even he could tell that he messed up.
But he seemed timid that entire promo.
Well,
he was not confident. He was not sure of himself. His delivery fell flat. It was very monotone. There was no inflection in his voice whatsoever.
Well, it's you have to wonder how comfortable that he is, or maybe he was even instructed to be that way. I mean, I've never seen a guy that. He was on the cusp of being a huge babyface at WrestleMania, come WrestleMania, and to have him stop using the swing, to start having him lose so much. I mean, I know Vince has it. I've heard that he's got it in his head that it doesn't matter how bad you beat someone, you can always they can always make him recover. Well, I'm sorry, but sometimes you can just damage someone beyond the point where, I mean, Ryback is an example of what Vince means, and I'm going to tell you, that's more an exception to the rule.
Well, there's a difference between a wrestler on television losing match after match after match and kind of getting their mojo back, and then there's something between the company outright saying, this guy sucks.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it just... I'm trying to remember. I remember there was a Randy Orton promo back when he was... in Evolution, in which Vince complained about how Orton had a stack of dimes for a neck. I remember Vince has done that with some people before. That they just run him down and then fully expect to have us believe in him when he so chooses.
Well, at a house show years ago, there was a match. I forget what year, but there was a match between Rhino and Tajiri.
Oh, and Vince came out and stopped
it. Yeah, Vince came out and stopped it and just crapped on him and just talking about like how bad the match was and it's not what people want to see. I mean, it's very hard to get your confidence as a performer when the guy calling the shots and signing your paycheck has publicly said they had no faith. That'd be kind of the equivalent to, you know, a big name director, you know, saying, you know what, I'm making this movie with Christian Bale. I think he's a crappy actor, but I make it with him. It's like, why do you care? Like, you're basically telling the audience, don't care about this individual because I don't, and because our company doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, you don't. I wouldn't think you'd want to do that with anybody, even if you think he's the biggest waste of of money on your talent pool. You want to try and make everybody as strong as possible. You want to be able to believe that anybody can beat anybody at any time. But what they've been doing, I mean that with on Austin's podcast. I don't know. I certainly disagreed with what he said. Even Stone Cold disagreed to a certain extent. But even there's so much that Stone Cold will say publicly.
I mean, speaking of guys that they're pushing, that leads into after Cesaro cuts his promo about how he doesn't connect with the audience he delivers in the ring. Out comes Bad News Barrett. And, of course, I'm a big Bad News Barrett guy. I like him. I mean, you got to remember, when he got stuck with that Bad News gimmick, everybody's reaction was, who did he piss off in the office?
Well, I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
But he's made it work, but he needs to stop doing that. It's me, it's me, it's BNB. I'm sorry. I mean, I know no one, the 90% of the fans don't know who DDP is or that DDP Diamond Dallas Page said that, but to me, he's an old school guy. I think Diamond Dallas Page every single time.
Plus, are we ready for a babyface Wade Barrett?
He's much better as a heel. I mean, what's the point of calling somebody bad news if they're going to be a babyface?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm quite sure that, if you had another certain bad news as a babyface and the beer-bellied sharecroppers, I don't think that would work either.
Oh, of course not. I mean, back then, yes, but not so much now. But, of course, Bad News Barrett and Cesaro have their match, quick little thing, and Bad News Barrett wins with the bullhammer. I think that's called the bullhammer,
yep.
1, 2, 3. And I don't know if Cesaro was legitimately knocked out, but he sold that bullhammer like he was seeing lights, like he was seeing stars.
Well, he certainly was looking at lights, which unfortunately has been Cesaro's more famous position lately. But I think it was just a fantastic sell job. I mean, Cesaro is one of the best.
No doubt at all. Then we go to a backstage segment where The Miz and Ms. Dow are doing a speech talking about themselves, and then Naomi comes up and thanks her for the tryout she got.
That seemed pretty bizarre. And then you take a look at Miz's reaction, and he's like, he did what? The plan was just to get her upset or whatever. And it seemed weird.
Well, I kind of know what they were going for, because the entire time was Miz recognizes that the Usos are the biggest threat currently to their tag team championship. So, hey, if you mess with Naomi, you mess with the Usos. You get her upset, you get the Usos upset, and then they're off their game and they probably lose. And if you beat the Usos enough time, in theory, they're kind of in the rearview mirror for a while. Like, you're not going to be seeing them in the ring as far as tag team champion matches go.
Well, take a look at Goldust and Stardust. They were hot. They were hot baby faces, and then they became rather not so hot heels, but had the tag titles. And now I don't remember the last time they've won a match.
Oh no, I completely agree.
And they are so far down the rankings, if you will. No pun intended on that.
I mean, I think with Golden Stardust, all you got to take is like one good match or one good angle, and then they're back in the thick of things.
Oh, sure.
I mean they're that talented.
Oh, they're that good, and the characters are that fascinating. How many times has Goldust has updated his gimmick to one thing or another? So I have full faith in the Rhodes boys that they could recover from this. But, it's just like you were saying, you beat the Usos for so much, they're so far down the hill. Same thing, but like right now, Stardust, Goldust, same thing. They've been beaten so much. It's not a new day for them.
But a team that wasn't beaten with the Usos, as they capitalized on the Miz's distraction, and we have new WWE Tag Team Champions. Miz gets hit with a super kick because he won't tag in Miz now, and then gets hit with the frog splash. 1, 2, 3. Naomi and the Usos celebrate in the ring. Miz is distraught. Now, this may be just me nitpicking, Jason, but like, I kind of feel that this match and this result should have happened next week, not this week.
I think this should have happened at the February special event. I thought it was way too soon to take the belts off of Miz and Mizdow. And the scenario to take it off of, I think that it should have been when Mizdow finally realizes that Miz is playing him for the fool and finally breaks away for the big babyface turn leading to a potential match between the two of them at WrestleMania. That's when they should have turned the tag belts. I really think it was way too soon for this, and what happened to them later on in the evening it just didn't make sense.
Which we'll get into, absolutely. But after the Usos won the tag team championship, we kind of go to the next match.
Just a side note, the Usos, I think, are the best tag team in the company, and they deserve to regain those tag belts.
Oh, no, I don't think anybody's questioning whether they deserve the belts or not. I mean, absolutely. I just think, you know, if they're looking to make a big impact for the first Raw of the new year, might have told a better story, but I'm just grasping at straws. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it at all. I'm just thinking maybe it would be better suited for next year, but as we get into the rest of the show, we'll kind of talk about how that may not be the case. Maybe going out of order here, but...
Yeah, we kind of missed we missed a Diva match.
Which, you know, you can understand why,
but... Then again, you've seen it once, you've seen it a million times.
Yeah. Best part about that match was Tyson Kidd.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Nikki Bella took on Natalya with Tyson Kidd in her corner. It was a good match for what it was. Natalya worked very hard. And eventually it came down to a distraction by Tyson Kidd, which distracted Natalya. She gets blasted with the can slam. I'm sorry, the shock treat. No, the whatever it is that they call it. I like the can slam.
Wow, that is crazy. I gotta tell you, that is one of the pop ups that happened at Brew with God Nats. Yes, I gotta throw one of the bus for that one. Yes, I was trying to look at some of the Raw notes, and that pop up came up. So, Steve, stop it.
and she beats Natalya after pretty much ending the minor push that Natalya was getting, which was leading up to a Divas Championship match.
I mean, I think this match is really only just put out here to kind of push the fact that Total Divas is coming back on Sunday.
Ugh. I couldn't. I watched it, but I just could not watch the last two episodes last season. It was getting that dreck. I don't know if I'm going to be able to start. If there's one reason for me to start watching it again, actually, there are two reasons why I would start watching it again, is that, number one, there's no Walking Dead on, and number two is that Paige is starting up as a new, as one of the new subjects of Total Divas, and I happen to like Paige.
I like Paige too. I mean, it should be interesting to see what she brings to the Total Divas dynamic, if you will.
Oh.
Another match that happened on the show. Hey, Winda. Of course, we had Jack Swagger taking on Luke Harper. Ended with Luke Harper getting the win. Really, you know, not a bad match, but it really just kind of fell out of place.
Have you heard if Zeb is out for good or if he's just selling the leg injury?
I don't know, because I think when it comes to Zeb Coulter, you don't keep him as a babyface. He is useless as a babyface. That man looks like a heel. He is a heel. You do not keep him as a babyface. I picture at some point when he comes back, he's turning on Jack Swagger, and he's either going to align himself with somebody currently on the roster, or they're going to bring in someone from NXT.
Well, I mean, granted, you can't. That mustache is 100% heel. You can't have that mustache be babyface. But. To have him turn on Swagger, so what? Swagger had a chance to get over as a big babyface. They crushed him, no pun intended. He's back on being nothing more than filler, been back to being an enhancement talent, which, I mean, I'm not going to go start jumping on the Swagger bandwagon now. I've never been a fan of his. I've never liked the character. Not a fan of his work, but he certainly has, in my mind, he's paid his dues. He shouldn't be treated like he's being treated right now. I mean, the same thing goes, I really think, for Kofi Kingston. They have done so much for the company in the last, almost 10 years, that I think both guys are just being horribly abused.
Man, I think it goes back to, you know, what have you done for me lately? I think that's kind of the company's motto. I think that's any company's motto when it comes to an entertainment brand.
Well, I mean, that's all well and good, but
I mean,
how can you say that when they won't even give them a chance to lace their own boots in a positive way?
Okay, so my question to you is, obviously, out of the two, Harper is over more than Jack Swagger right now, and they're doing more with Harper. So it's kind of like, what's the point of having Jack Swagger go over on Harper?
I think it's another case of a match that never should have happened. I don't know if we've had this conversation, but I've gone on record with a few places on how I've never been a fan of the squash match because I don't feel that it does anything for anybody. Especially when you can take a man, like, for example, who's 240 pounds, throws a punch to the midsection to the established guy, and he doesn't even acknowledge he got hit. I mean, that always took me right out of the believability in my idea, you know, in my enjoyment. But, I mean, in this case, if we want to get Harper over Strong, why can't we bring out a local guy, have him get wrecked, and save Swagger for a match that means something?
Does that defeat the purpose of not having squash matches?
It's half a dozen of one, six of the other. You know, who are you going to make money with? You know, Jack Swagger. You know, when you decide that there's nobody else when another, say Ryback goes down to injury, just like Sheamus did, and you've got nobody for Rusev, and you decide to go back to the well with Swagger, you're not going to make money on it because Swagger gets crushed by everybody.
No, I definitely see where you're coming from. I'm just playing devil's advocate because, I mean, you got to see right now, you got a bunch of guys in the WWE locker room that they're basically job guys and gimmicks.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I know I'm contradicting myself, but maybe it is something that, you know, as long as the squash is done right, in my mind, like, you know, you don't even let the local guy get a shot in. You know, that way you don't have to worry about the established guy not selling it. I mean, you have the local guy come in, gets absolutely crushed, 100% one-sided. You don't get – he doesn't get anything in. Harper takes him out in like 120 seconds. Harper looks like a complete monster, and you don't have to worry about trying to rebuild the guy who just got crushed when you need him down the line.
Speaking of selling and down the line, the next match is Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. And Roman Reigns wins via disqualification after a lengthy back-and-forth match where the Big Show kind of does commentary, and then he throws the table on Roman Reigns, and they kind of sell the whole deal. Is Roman Reigns hurt? Is he going to be out of action? I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. The man just came back from injury. Now, why do you want to tease another injury so soon after he comes back?
Well, I can sort of see that. I mean, when you've got someone who, you've made a big deal over their injury, and you don't have the heel go after it, especially something like, where they made it a big deal that it is a hernia surgery, so his midsection is tender. So you could certainly play on that and to keep Roman Reigns vulnerable. What I was questioning was, number one, you just announced that in the closing segment you were going to have Seth Rollins as the guest of the Cutting Edge Peep Show, so you couldn't have him get beat here. And number two, why wasn't this on a pay-per-view special event? There's history here. This was a money match. This shouldn't have been. This is another match on this show that never should have happened.
I mean, we're going to go – I'm going to go into this in a lot more detail later on in the show because this match told me something major. And I don't want to spoil it now, but I'll go into it near the end. Of course, there was a backstage segment with Seth Rollins talking about how happy he was with the Big Show helping him out, and says he's going to do a New Year's toast to John Cena on the Cutting Edge Peep Show. And of course, after that, Bray Wyatt cuts a promo about the ambulance match he's having with Dean Ambrose next week on Raw. Based on Bray Wyatt's promo, it sounds like this is the blow-off of the feud.
It does, which is... I mean, this has been an entertaining feud. The promos back and forth have just been absolutely entertaining. Though both characters... I mean, I don't see... You know, if Bray Wyatt beats Ambrose... I don't see it helping Bray. I see it hurting Ambrose. If Ambrose beats Bray, I don't see that helping him. I see that hurting Bray. So this is, you know, this is a feud that, I don't know, both guys have been hurt by really bad losses over the last year. I don't see how there would be a true winner, just a true loser in this.
I mean, the word in the street suggests that they're hoping that Undertaker is going to be healthy enough to do a match with Bray Wyatt. So if that is the prevailing theory, you want to keep Bray Wyatt strong. You do not want Bray Wyatt losing once and going into WrestleMania. Even if it turns out Taker is not ready to come back at this year's WrestleMania, you could still at least keep Bray Wyatt strong so that way he becomes a viable option for somebody else at WrestleMania. But you said the feud's been great. The feud's not the worst I've ever seen, but I think the feud, for my taste, has been way too gimmicky for two guys that are very dark and sinister and have a strong message.
Well, the matches have been good, but the promos have been fantastic. I mean, just I love Ambrose. I think he's got so much potential. I think he's got a greater chance right now of pulling ahead of the pack than Roman Reigns does at the moment. But I just don't see how beating him, you know, he lost to Rollins, he lost to Wyatt, he lost to Orton, he's lost so much. I really think he needs that another loss here is going to hurt him.
I mean, if he loses here, yeah, things don't look good for him in theory, but if he has an outstanding performance in the Royal Rumble match, not necessarily wins, but has an awesome performance, things change. I mean, it takes one great performance, win, lose, or draw, to kind of bring you back from purgatory.
That's true. But if anything, Ambrose has the crowd in his hands, at the tip of his hands. His character is so unique to what we have been force fed over the last few years, that you know they really could build on him. I just hate to see them humbling him, if you will, at this point.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I mean, Ambrose is awesome. Dean Ambrose is an exceptional talent, no doubt about it. But speaking of exceptional talents, Daniel Bryan gives his big announcement. Daniel Bryan has officially entered the 2015 Royal Rumble. He kind of does the Edge promo, talks about how he went through this year, talks about WrestleMania, talks about winning the title, talks about getting married, talks about the passing of his father. Then he teases that, you know, he might have to retire, and of course he announces he's not retiring, which leads to a big yes chant, and he talks about how he's winning the Royal Rumble. And, you know, based on this reaction alone, I thought the yes movement was dead. But it doesn't appear to that does not appear to be the case. And again, I'm going to break this down in our main event segment, if you will. But that was an awesome moment. The delivery of the promo, the fans reacting, his passion, everything.
I expected him to proclaim that he was done. I have not heard. I mean, the last report I heard was that he was still not. He was still losing feeling in his arm, that the nerve damage was similar to what had taken Arn Anderson out. I really was surprised to hear that he was cleared. I really was surprised, and I tell you, if he is 100%, I welcome him back.
Oh, of course. I mean, Daniel Bryan definitely adds in a positive way to this current WWE roster. It's going to be very exciting to see what he brings to the fold come 2015. And then we have a backstage segment with Miz and Mizdow talking to Edge and Christian, who is the guest host. They're also the guest GMs for the evening. And then Edge basically had a puppet stunt double deal, making fun of the Miz.
That was hilarious.
Miz wanted to rematch the tag team titles, and basically Edge says, no, I'm not going to give you a tag team title rematch, but I'll give you a different tag team match. And then, of course, it is the debut of The Ascension. Now, we got to get into this a little bit, because, of course, the match, The Ascension went over with their finish, The Fall of Man. There was the debut, Connor and Victor. But we got to talk about this in detail, because I mean, first of all, my impression was the match is too long. Now, that sounds weird saying that this match is only about 3 minutes, but it still went way too long. They should have just squashed them quickly, hit their big moves, and then hit the Fall of Man. And what was hard about this also is that they did a little back and forth, which I was like, no, you don't want to do a back and forth with the power team. The guy, the team that has power moves. Also, they beat the wrong guy in Mizdow. Now, granted, Mizdow's a comedy act, but the thing is, the fans like Mizdow. And when you have him getting destroyed by these two new guys that you're not sure if the audience is going to take them or not, the audience is going to kind of look at it and go, should we be cheering this? I thought we liked Mizdow. Wait, you're confusing the audience. So they should have beat the Miz.
Well, Miz and Mizdow shouldn't have even been in this match. I mean, this is yet another case for where they should have had another couple of locals. I thought the Ascension were supposed to be heels, so having them in there with a couple of heels. I mean, I know Mizdow is supposed to be more babyface. You know, is the closeted babyface, but you know, this just I mean, this would have been a good usage of like if we had to have an established team. Then Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston would have been good here.
Even Slater or Titus O'Neil.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if Slater wasn't on the outs because of his current legal status, I mean, there's so many other teams that they could have taken out of mothballs, even to the point of grabbing Joe Broney and his brother Jay Broney and bringing them out for an evening stroll as well. With that being said, I have never been impressed with the Ascension. I don't see charisma in them. If they are still in the company by WrestleMania, I'll be surprised. You know, they've been working on they botched the Fall of Man, and they've been working on that for years. I mean, really, they look like a poor man's Road Warriors. They don't have the thickness of the Road Warriors. They don't look powerful like the Road Warriors. And they're supposed to be the 2014, 2015 version of the Road Warriors. And it's not working for me. It's nice to see another tag team up here, but I just don't buy them.
Now, I actually have been impressed with the Ascension as far as what I've seen in NXT, but that leads to how I think they made a mistake with the Ascension here on Raw, because the way they booked the Ascension, from how they won to their finish to the entrance they got and everything, they didn't really book them produce them as if this is the first time you're seeing these guys. They really booked this in a while. Like, we all know who these guys are because you've seen them on NXT. And that's a mistake. You can't assume that your audience watches NXT. Because you got to admit, as good as NXT is, and as awesome as that show is, when it comes to people that have the WWE Network, there are always going to be a lot of people that say, hey, you know, why am I going to watch these guys that may or may not make it on the WWE roster? I'll wait until they get on the roster and see what they really do.
I mean, how I would have booked the Ascension, they should have charged the ring and just absolutely like a double shoulder block, double clothesline, Fall of Man 1-2-3, and absolutely powered the crowd into it.
I mean, that Fall of Man finish is similar to the Eliminators, ECW.
Total Elimination.
Total Elimination, because the thing is, there are some guys that could take, because even Total Elimination, the spin kick, the tripping kick is fine, but what really sells the move is how well you take the kick to the face from John Cronus. And some guys took that move so well that there are some guys that couldn't take that move to save their life. And I've noticed that in NXT where some guys, the way they take the Fall of Man, looks like it absolutely kills them. And the other guys, they just can't take it that well. And Mizdow, I'm not sure like if it was a botch job or what, but they should have put someone in that they knew for a fact that could make that finish look extraordinary. Because if nothing else, if their presentation didn't get over, if their screaming, their robes, their silly face paint didn't get over, that finish would have gotten over if they had the right guy taking it. And Mizdow was not the right guy to take that.
I don't think I would put the blame on Mizdow on this. I think their timing was off. And plus, the one thing you know to bring back Total Elimination, Cronus and Saturn could pull that out of nowhere. Just you blinked, and all of a sudden you had the heel kick and the trip kick, just boom, just out of nowhere. These two have to set up and literally take their time setting it up, and their timing's just not crisp on it.
I mean, the thing is, I'm not saying Mizdow messed it up, but there are certain moves in wrestling that some people can take, some people can't. Like for example, a body slam. Everybody can take a body slam and take it well and sell it. Like a DDT, not everybody takes a DDT the best. The pedigree, not everybody takes the pedigree the prettiest. You know what I mean? Like some people can take that flat bump perfectly. Other guys, like Kane, can't take that move. And I think the Fall of Man is one of those moves that, depending on who they're giving it to, some people can make it look like $1 million, others can't. And Mizdow may or may not be one of those guys that can take that move and sell it.
I mean that's it's possible that it could have been that, but from what I saw, their timing just was like he had the trip kick going before the heel kick started going, and I could just see that there was hesitation there.
Oh, there definitely was, because when I saw them setting up for it, I thought it was too soon. Like it definitely looks like a minor miscommunication. Again, maybe they were nervous. It's their first time on the roster. These two guys that a lot of people have been saying for a long time now they should be in the roster. Actually, they were actually going to be on the main roster a lot sooner, but Triple H vetoed at the last minute because he wanted a reason to bring them in. I mean, Mattel already has action figures of the Ascension made because they were told they're going to be on the roster. So,
oh yeah, there's already a Lego. I know it's not Lego brand, but what they use for what their version of Lego, there's already the Ascension playset ready to go.
Exactly. So, I mean, these are guys that WWE have had plans for a long time. But it's funny you mentioned the LOD, because talking to a few people leading up to this episode of Raw, me being an NXT guy, you know, I talked to them, hey, so what do you think of the Ascension? And they all said the same thing. They remind me of the Road Warriors. They remind me of Legion of Doom. And I like how in NXT they just wore their Ascension t-shirts and had that rising entrance. But in NXT they did not have the shoulder pads, they did not have the robes, they did not have the face paint. And I know they're trying to dress up the act, because it's kind of like going from Broadway to, you know, a major Hollywood motion picture. You dress up the act. And that's what they did with the face paint and the robes and the shoulder pads. But I think sometimes in this case less is more. And they don't need the shoulder pads, because you don't want people thinking LOD to the point where it seems like a blatant ripoff.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, you've got to, I did appreciate that they were trying to dress them up a little more. I don't remember them having face paint in NXT, but I could be wrong.
They don't. You know, they don't have that. They don't have face paint. They don't have the robes. They don't have the shoulder pads. They just wear their own T-shirt with the Ascension logo on it.
Yeah, I just. You know, there's something. I just don't think they found the right characters for them. And when I think of like the Powers of Pain or the Road Warriors or Demolition, I think of these really huge, jacked up powerhouses that I fully believe could tear me apart in an instant. I would tap out before the bell even rang. I don't see that with them. I just I don't see them as powerhouse. I don't see power in them. Big E, I see power in him. He's Mark Henry, I see power in him. Connor and Victor? No, I just don't see it.
I mean, regardless of how their debut came across, because they're Triple H project and the NXT standouts, they're gonna have more than the first chance. They're gonna have a first, second, third, fourth, or fifth chance. So I mean, hopefully, the Ascension and WWE can learn from this and say, okay, what worked, what didn't work, tweak the act, and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't say fire them. I'm not going
that
far.
Oh, no, no.
But I just the way that they were portrayed Monday night. I don't think it's going to work, and they do need to keep tweaking. They need to find what can work. I mean, this isn't the first act to come up from NXT and bomb. Adam Rose is a perfect example of what works fantastic in Full Sail University, but just does not translate onto the Raw stage.
I mean, again, I mean that you perfectly said. I mean, you really can't say it any other way. I mean, hopefully these guys can flourish under the bright lights. It remains to be seen. But the main event segment of Raw was the Cutting Edge Peep Show. Seth Rollins was the guest. He has a toast to John Cena, if you will. And then, of course, all hell breaks loose. Big Show comes out, stands in the corner, does his deal. And then, of course, Seth Rollins sucker shots Christian with the briefcase. Falls out of the ring. Edge pushes Rollins. Big Show grabs Edge to get a choke slam him. Shoves him down to the mat. Puts the briefcase under his head. And of course, Rollins makes the threat. Calls John Cena out. John Cena comes running to the ring, which I liked, by the way, because he kept on calling John Cena out. It took forever for John Cena to come out. And I said to myself, please don't cue his music.
Oh, that's what I was thinking, too. It's like, well, you're waiting for them to cue the music before you go out, aren't you?
Because if you really cared about somebody being hurt, you're not going to say, I'm going out there as soon as my music's ready. You know, so I was so happy he ran out without music. And, of course, Seth Rollins makes the demand. I will break Edge's neck. I will paralyze and won't be able to hold his kid ever again. If you don't bring back the authority, I'll break his neck. So, of course, it took John Cena forever to make his mind up, but John Cena says, all right, he will bring the authority back. And, of course, Seth Rollins goes for the curb stomp anyway, onto Edge. John breaks it up. They fight, and, of course, Rollins gets the upper hand with a curb stomp to John Cena, which I thought looked fabulous.
Oh, well, I think Cena jumped a little too high for it, but it looked good enough. I'm willing to forgive that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the end result was awesome, so I can forgive the high jump.
I mean, there was enough that took me out of the moment throughout that entire thing that kept kicking me out of the moment right straight up until the very end that, you know, to see John Cena left laying was, you know, it was enough to, you know, it was a satisfactory moment out of a long segment that had so many things that just were out of character, missing, and just were wrong that kept taking me out of that segment and keeping me from being completely believing in it.
And, of course, the end of the segment, Rollins comes out and goes onto the apron. I mean, not the apron, the top of the ramp. He's with Big Show. He's with J&J Security. Lesnar Heyman comes out. And, of course, the King of Kings blares over the stereos. Triple H and Stephanie come out wishing everybody a happy new year, so they are back. So basically, the authority's back in power, Daniel Bryan's in the Royal Rumble, you know, it's going to be interesting 2015. What do you think about Triple H and Stephanie appearing at the very end?
I thought that was horrific. That was absolutely, that it took you out of the moment. They were not supposed to be at Raw. There was because of the Survivor Series thing, they should not have been there. To have them appear out of nowhere for something that was, you know, yes, Seth Rollins planned to do what he did, but the way it was portrayed, it wasn't a plot. It wasn't a long, you know, week by week, hey, let's find someone with a busted neck and get him so I can force John Cena into reinstalling the authority. It was a taking an advantage of a situation moment. They shouldn't have been there.
I tend to agree with you because not only did it kind of feel cheap, like, oh, they were there anyway. They should have held off till next week, so you kind of see them, and it's kind of like, we're back. But also, it really, even though we're 40 days removed, it really ruins Survivor Series for me now.
Yeah, it takes away from what the vigilante sting did to help. Took away some of Dolph Ziggler's mojo. And plus, like, there were other things, like, you know, Christian got hit with a briefcase in the gut. He went down and he disappeared. Why wasn't he even seen trying to get back into the ring to help his brother?
I mean,
Edge. Why wasn't he struggling with, you know, trying to weasel out of the Big Show? Why wasn't he yelling at Cena, "No, don't do it"? You know, being the sacrificial hero. You know, he just laid there. And that was just so out of character for him that it was all of that that took me right out of this moment.
I mean, granted, I one of the things that I thought about, I could have Edge not saying don't do it as a pass, because you can kind of claim it, well, like, the Big Show has squeezed his neck, so he's in so much pain, maybe he can't focus right now. But the Christian thing bothered me,
yeah.
Because I thought, because the thing is, Seth Rollins hit him with a hell of a shot. I mean, you could tell they probably say, you know, it's got to be a little stiff, because he walloped him in the stomach with that briefcase. But it took so long to get Cena out there that it took so long for Cena to finally say, yes, I'll bring him back. That
he should have been on his feet trying to slide back.
Sure, yeah, he should have recovered by then.
Yeah, I mean, there should have been no thought to his head. And I'm quite sure, I mean, if they were able to protect Bret Hart in a situation after a stroke, they certainly could protect Christian getting a beat down very easily for something that would make you believe that he is out and cannot try to help Edge. That bothered me. Where did he go? Did he take a nap? I mean, was he that tired?
Now, let me ask you a question I was kind of thinking about, too, and tell me if you agree on this. When Seth Rollins was making his demand that, you know, bring the authority back or I break Edge's neck, Jamie Noble comes out with a microphone with that shitty grin on his face and hands Cena the microphone so he can make his decision public in front of the entire world. If I'm Cena and I don't want the authority back, you know, or I don't want Edge getting hurt, why don't you snatch up Jamie Noble? It may seem like a TV hostage trade type of deal, but it's like, hey, I got your guy, you got my guy, you break his neck, I'm breaking his.
Well, Seth Rollins is such a nasty heel, he could care less if you were to snap Jamie Noble's neck.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But then again, I don't think you want your hero, your white meat babyface, John Cena, threatened to break somebody's neck.
Oh no, I mean, you can't do that, but... You know, you've got Rollins is such a dastardly heel. He could care less if one of his underlings. I mean, he sent his underlings out to pasture, out to get killed several times. What's one more? What's one more time? What I think they should have done forced Cena into accepting a match where if he loses, then the authority comes back. And then have it be one of the more ridiculous no disqualification things, and you know, have a dastardly GM so that, you know, if it looks like that Rollins is going to get counted out, then all of a sudden, you know, that was one of the things I actually enjoyed with the one of the Stone Cold versus Dude Love matches when Vince was the referee and Pat Patterson was the ring announcer and Briscoe was the timekeeper, and they just pulled stipulation out of the air to keep it in Dude Love's favor. They could recreate that. They really haven't done that since then, and to the point where, you know, no matter what Cena did, he was going to get knocked out by the Big Show or F5'd by Brock Lesnar or a German suplex to death, and he would lose, gaining sympathy on him. Leading up to his match with Brock Lesnar, going into the Royal Rumble. I just, that would have been, but then again, they don't like showing Cena's weak.
Yeah, it's all going to be interesting to see how it unfolds as we head into 2015, as well as the Royal Rumble at the end of January. But Jason, we got to talk a little about TNA, Impact Wrestling, coming to Destination America. Their first live show is going to be Wednesday, January 7th. The main event is going to be Bobby Lashley versus Bobby Roode 3 in NYC. Their first match got my vote for like one of the Match of the Year candidates, and then the second match is pretty good. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, the two matches, well, I think they've had more than the two matches. I think this is like about four or five. But those two have not put on a bad match. My only concern would be ring rust, because I don't remember hearing Bobby Roode, I mean, other than One House of Hardcore, I haven't heard of Bobby Roode having worked since the last DNA tapings, and I know Lashley hasn't. So I'd be a little concerned about ring rust over the last couple of months. But if they can get through that, that should be a phenomenal main event to put on for their first new show in Destination America.
Now, of course, after the first show for Destination America, which is going to be Wednesday, January 7th, the very next week, which I believe is going to be January 9th, they're moving to Impact Wrestling's moving to Friday nights.
Well, they should be happy that SmackDown is moving to Thursdays, so that they wouldn't get crushed even worse than what they will end up having now.
Which could be the reason why Destination America decided to put TNA on Friday, because SmackDown is leaving Friday and going back to its home day on Thursday. But why not keep it on Wednesday? Because you got to think about this: TNA by default has lost half their audience. We're moving from Spike TV to Destination America. And now you're putting it in what is known as the death nail of time slots, Friday nights at 8.
Well, I can, with knowing how that they are going to rerun Impact, not only that night, but throughout Saturday, I can sort of see that, because then you're keeping it fresh within that 24-hour cycle. So people who missed it at 9 o'clock on Friday nights, for people with lives, they won't. Then they can catch it on Saturdays. And plus, like, I believe that they're going to have Mike Tenay do different wraparounds with some backstage information or special interviews or.
He's doing the backstage segments. He's also doing another show that's another Impact Wrestling show that's going to be on Destination America, because Taz and Josh Matthews are now the commentary team for Impact Wrestling.
Which is, I got great respect for Mike Tenay, but he's never been a good play-by-play. He's always been a good caller. He's been good for information, background information. But as play-by-play, he's no Jim Ross. He's no Gorilla Monsoon. I think Josh Matthews, I think WWE made a mistake letting him go. I think that this is definitely in TNA's favor.
I mean, the thing is, get Taz, who's more familiar with the TNA product. But speaking of TNA, now that they're on Destination America, have you seen their new logo?
I have seen it, and it didn't move me one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was good. I mean, I wasn't wild by it, but I thought it was good. I mean, of course, it has the six-sided ring in behind the Impact Wrestling text, so that tells you to definitely keeping the six-sided ring. But, I mean, Jason, why do we stop calling this TNA?
This would be the time to drop TNA, the TNA name.
I mean, when they finally take TNA off the world title, I mean, I really think Impact Wrestling is the way to go. Just drop TNA. I mean, this conversation, many of us, others have had this conversation many a times, but those three letters got to go.
Yeah, I mean, you take TNA, yes, it's supposed to mean total nonstop action, but if I were to go up to the stranger on the street and ask, hey, what do you know about TNA? They're going to talk to me about a girl. They're not going to talk to me about wrestling.
Oh, no, I completely agree with you. But going back to this whole time slot thing, I know that Destination America is going to replay this show at length. so people have multiple chances to see it. Plus, DVR, people can tape it, record it on their DVR, what have you. But I think there's something to be said for trying to build an audience with a time slot. The point of having a particular show at a particular time is you're hoping that you're going to build an audience with that initial time slot. And I just think Friday at 8 o'clock is the worst time, plus, or even 9 o'clock is the worst time. You've got to remember, Destination America. I keep on thinking Destination X because that's TNA show.
Well, I think
their pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a when they get to the Destination X time era. I think they're definitely going to play on that.
Oh, of course. But the thing is, back in the day when ECW went on TNN, I was a single kid, fresh out of high school, still at my parents' house, you know, partying, do whatever. You know, I was a hardcore. I was into wrestling. You wouldn't believe. You know, still am, but. Like, I was wearing the T-shirts, going to every event imaginable. You name it, I was buying tickets to any wrestling show. And I even had a hard time getting into ECW on Friday nights. I mean, I used to set my VCR. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
I remember I used to set my VCR to record, you know, ECW on TNN for an hour. And even then, like, when I finally got around to watching it, I still wasn't into it because people had already spoiled the results. And now with social media and everybody having smartphones, you can't go on Twitter without somebody saying, oh, this happened or that happened. Because, again, I remember, TNA has all of their wrestlers tweeting throughout the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got
so it's hard not to see spoilers. Even if you're not looking for them, they're going to come up.
Yeah, I mean, if you happen to have, like, I get a lot of tweets sent directly to my smartphone. I do that whole thing, I don't. You know, so especially WWE, and those times when I've had issues with the network during a pay-per-view show and I end up being about a good 5-10 minutes behind, I'm getting the results being texted to me as they happen with no respect as to, you know, the fact that I haven't seen it. Never mind the fact if I happen to miss the show for some reason, and it's impossible for me to miss the to miss the spoilers. In some ways they could use this to their favor, but you know, it's not something that is very easily done. I mean, you say, hey, we've got what a fantastic match that was. You've got to check the replay, and this is what you miss when you don't watch it live.
I mean, for those who don't know, Destination America, they're in the family of Discovery Channel networks, and not every cable system carries Destination America. I mean, that they're in Destination America is a channel, a network that's in a lot less homes than Spike TV, so they've lost a good chunk of their audience. And reading a report, what I believe was WrestlingInc.com, a report came out that Destination America, their highest audience ever for a show was slightly under 200,000 viewers. So not many people watch that show. It's a network that's on the rise. It's a network that's still trying to find their place in the digital media world of television.
Well, Destination America is not something that I'm not familiar with. I have watched a few shows on there, some really good shows, and I got to ask you, when are we going to get our crossover with United States of Bacon?
It's happening. I mean, Eric Young will be all over that.
Oh, and for those of you, who haven't seen it, I got a chef. I don't remember his name offhand. He goes around and sampling all the bacon dishes all around America. It's a nifty show if you like Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives, and it's kind of tasty too.
The other big news coming out of TNA. It's official. TNA announced it on their website about 10 hours ago. Kurt Angle has re-signed with the company. Not exactly a big surprise, considering WWE doesn't want him. The story came out where Kurt Angle went over Triple H's head, went to Vince. Vince said it's up to Triple H, and Triple H said no.
You want in, it's a one-year full-time contract.
Exactly, and they know Kurt Angle cannot do a full-time deal right now. He cannot be full-time. So, I mean, that was their way of saying get lost. Because they knew he can't take a full-time. He wasn't going to do full-time. They knew it. That was just their way of saying get lost.
He didn't leave on the best of terms.
No way.
You know, I'm sure that, you know, had things been a little bit different, you know, maybe, you know, that Vince would have taken him back. I mean, I'm sure he would have loved to have a full-time Kurt Angle. I'd love to see him back for one more run, but, you know, his body is his worst enemy right now. He can't go a full-time. He can barely go a part-time right now.
What does Kurt Angle mean to TNA in 2015 on Destination America?
Kurt Angle is a name. You can never take away the fact that in 1996 he won an Olympic gold medal for freestyle wrestling with a broken freaking neck. You cannot take that away from him. That is what his whole career has been based on. He's also, if you think about it, he's actually wrestled for TNA longer than he ever did for WWE.
Yeah, this is true.
He was the first major signing from WWE, but he's also, you know, he's one of the longest tenured workers there. He brings the name, he brings the Olympics, he brings the gold medal, he brings WWE fans, because you still think of him as a WWE guy, even though he has worked there longer than he ever did WWE.
But he didn't have the impact of TNA that everybody hoped he would. So what makes you think that he's going to have any impact now?
Oh, there you go.
I mean, you got to remember, he's older now. His body is more damaged now.
Well, the thing is, who has impact in 2014?
El Torito.
Yes, that would be exactly who I would sign. No, I wouldn't. Other than, you know, if TNA would have to get John Cena, for them to even make a dent in 2015, there's just really in this day and age, there's no dream matches anymore. You know, there's no way that you can pull a Hogan Flair with TNA anymore, unless you got John Cena, unless somehow you can sign John Cena, and that's never going to happen. There is nobody out there that they could get that is a good enough worker right now that can even be anywhere close to a dream match.
Now, Jason, the question I got to ask you. Does this move going from Destination America, going from Spike TV, to Destination America, does this make TNA officially an independent organization?
Well, technically, it has been from the start.
But if it wasn't before, is it now?
Let's kind of put this in a different way. Back in the olden days, if you were a if you had a cable deal, you had a long-going TV deal, then Pro Wrestling Illustrated would consider your title a World Heavyweight Championship. If you didn't, then you were just a champion. Would I strip TNA of their world title? No. If Discovery is willing to promote them, if I'm watching one of the shows on Discovery or Science Channel, you know, it's like, all right, I'm a big fan of how it's made. Great show, especially when you got a subject that, you know, you're kind of curious as to, you know, how do they make that jelly bean? If on an ad you've got, hey, come watch TNA on Destination America, you know, they could pull people from that, because you never know who your audience is. You know, you could be, or if you're on Discovery Channel and you've got Eaten Alive, you know, while you're waiting to see some jamoke get eaten by a snake, hey, we've got snakes over here. This guy is as bad as a snake. Come watch him on Impact Wrestling. There's enough of a family there that. If the parent network is willing to promote, they could. They they could build the Destination America brand around this. There is a possibility. Will they? I don't know.
I mean, the reality, one thing that goes in TNA's favor with being on Destination America is that Destination America really seems all in, because they're going to be airing Impact a couple of times a week. They already have all these one-hour specials booked to highlight a certain wrestler. There's a Bully Ray special. There's a Kurt Angle special. There's a Bobby Roode special. I mean, they got a Jeff Hardy special. They have a lot of stuff going on. Also, they have another TNA show, which Mike today is going to host. So right now, they're all in on TNA, which suggests there's going to be a lot of cross-promotion, and the network's going to heavily promote the brand, where Spike TV, you know, really never promoted TNA Impact.
The only time I ever honestly saw ads for TNA Impact was when I was watching TNA Impact.
I mean,
the same way when they had ECW. The only times I ever saw ads for ECW was while watching ECW.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that ECW was a test run for their WWE, you know, acquisition. But I think the way their relationship ended with WWE soured Spike TV on pro wrestling, but they figured, hey, let's try it out again with this TNA brand and see what happens. But even when I flip through the channels, the only time I watch Spike TV is whenever there was a WWE, ECW, MMA or pro wrestling. The only time I watch Spike TV, but when I channel surf, I always come across a commercial for the next UFC event when they were on Spike TV. I always saw a commercial nowadays for the next Bellator event. Hell, I even see promotion ads for Glory Kickboxing. Do you know what Glory Kickboxing is? I see promotions for that all the time. I've never channel surfed and saw an ad for TNA Wrestling.
Yeah, it's just, if Spike doesn't believe in you, they're not going to promote you.
So if Destination America is going to promote TNA as much as it looks like they're going to, I think that's a positive. But overall, to kind of answer my own question, give my two cents to my own question, are they independent? I don't think that they're, quote, an independent, but they're, in my opinion, they are no longer the definitive number two promotion in the country. I think now that's up for grabs, whether it's Ring of Honor, whether it's TNA, whether it's Lucha Underground, if Global Force gets something going, I think number two is up for grabs right now.
I would disagree on the fact that, TNA or Impact Wrestling. Let's try and get away from the TNA. Impact Wrestling is on a cable station that is available on a good, you know, it's not as much as Spike, but is on a good chunk of change. Ring of Honor, I am still. It's been, what, 2-3 years since Ring of Honor was bought by that network, and I have still yet to see them come to have a station in Boston. So I would not knock them out of number two yet.
Okay, I mean, we could probably go back and forth on that topic all day, but we definitely got to move on to some CM Punk news.
Yes, he of Virgin Nose. As per Nate Diaz.
Yes, but the Front Row Brian, who is a popular MMA poster on the Reddit website, has revealed, and usually his MMA stories, if you aren't familiar with this particular poster, usually he's right a lot more than he's wrong, and he's been known for breaking stories before they actually happen. But it looks like that CM Punk has actually found a home for his MMA training, and he's going to be training in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is about 2 hours away from his home in Chicago, Illinois, and he's going to be training with the Rufus Sport MMA team. So that's where CM Punk is going to throw his hat into the ring as far as training full-time for his MMA debut in the UFC. Now, let me give you guys some background if you're not familiar with Rufus Sport. It's one of the top MMA academies on the planet right now. And the founder of the camp is a guy named Duke Rufus, who is a awesome kickboxer, one of the better kickboxers that ever come out of the United States. And he's been running this camp for quite some time now. And even though they do it all at Rufus Sport, kickboxing is in their DNA. It's kind of like, you know, if you know about MMA, it's kind of like Team Quest back in the day that was ran by Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, Matt Lindland. Even though they trained boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, wrestling was what was in that school's DNA. And even though Rufus Sport, they train every which way imaginable, like their specialty is their striking. And they have a lot of fighters that have come and gone out of that camp, such as Jens Pulver, such as Stefan Bonner, Pat Barry. Currently, Matt Mitrione trains out of the Rufus Sport camp. And also Ben Askren, who is a Olympic wrestler, national champion, fights overseas, you know, for the 1FC promotion, one of the top welterweights in the world. And the star pupil right now of the Rufus Sport MMA team is the current UFC lightweight champion, Anthony Showtime Pettis. Now, some people would say, well, they're a kickboxing camp, and Anthony Pettis is a kickboxer, but Anthony Pettis has won his last two fights with submissions. That tells you they have a good ground coach. And right now, with the limited experience that CM Punk has, his ground game is his specialty, and self-admittedly, he's even said that his striking is his weakness. Well, his striking is about to get a whole lot better, courtesy of Duke Rufus and company.
Now, I have heard several reports over the years that whenever Punk has had downtime, he has trained with Gracie's with the Gracie family on various jiu-jitsu, and you've seen him incorporate that in his wrestling style, in his work style. So. He is not someone who is unfamiliar to the fight game. You can't be and be in train with Gracie's. And plus, you know, as you and I both know, when it comes to professional wrestling, all you got to do is tweak something just the most minor way, and you've got a move that is worked and looks like it could hurt you to something that will hurt you. So it's a matter of you being able to use everything. Now, One of my biggest issues, and I had to deal with this while I was in wrestling training with a certain martial artist that you might be familiar with, in the fact that, you know, he had trouble adjusting to wrestling punches because he was used to punching for real. Punk is the other way around. He's used to working his punches. Now he's got to really blast someone right in the mouth. He's going to have to rewire his brain completely to be able to do that in a full-time thing. Now, I know you're going to bring up Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar, and I'm purposely not mentioning Bobby Lashley, Brock Lesnar does not – he's got such a natural aggressiveness to him, which is something that – I don't see, you know, Punk does not have a natural aggression like a Brock Lesnar.
I don't know, if you heard CM Punk's podcast, he seems to be very aggressive.
Well, you know, I can talk a good game too. You know, and I'm not taking anything away. I can talk a good game too, and I can be, and I'm in real life, I'm probably one of the biggest wimps you'll ever come across. But I can certainly run my mouth and certainly sound like I could back it up. But I'd be the first to run behind Mark Henry and let him take care of the issue for me. So, you know, we've got to have to see what will happen with Punk. I know that as far as the promotion goes, Dana White has already won. I know I am going to go see this show. I know several people who are not regular UFC fight watchers are going to see this show. Whenever he debuts. So Dana White has already won. As far as CM Punk's success, it's up in the air. You know, I've seen guys go down to a pump kick in, you know, like somebody doing a real life brogue kick in an MMA fight, and that was the entire fight, was a guy charging the cage, pump kick, and it was done. I've also seen fights where they've gone, you know, five-minute rounds. You can't. It's really tough to call. CM Punk.
I mean,
he may not. I may have. He may not be he may not be an aggressive person like Brock Lesnar, but he's a smart person, he's intelligent, and I'm quite sure that, I mean, he's a tough guy. You've got to be a tough guy to be a professional wrestler. You've got to be a tough guy to be able to work with a staph infection in your back. How he was able to do that for so long, I'll never know. That man is tougher than I am. So, I don't know. He could be the next big thing as far as UFC goes.
I mean, there are certain things, there are certain nuances to competing in any form of martial arts that you have to retrain your brain to, you know, acclimate to when you take on such an endeavor such as, you know, not only fighting in mixed martial arts full time, but debuting with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. You did speak, like, for example, as far as one of the nuances. Like, I trained very briefly in mixed martial arts.
I was actually just about to ask you, when you did that training, how was it for you to go from a worked punch, from doing a worked punch when work kicks, how did you adjust from going from that to going to real shots?
Now, here's the thing. The actual act of hitting somebody as hard as I can came very easy for me. There was no transition there. The hard part was actually learning the arts of striking. You know, not telegraphing my punches, twisting my wrist as I throw the punch. When I throw a jab, not just throwing it out there to set up an overhand right. I mean, that was just learning the art of striking. Was the change?
Oh yeah, I mean we're in professional wrestling. We're taught to telegraph it to the point where somebody in the last row should be able to see what you're doing. That doesn't translate well if you're boxing or kickboxing or MMA fighting. That you've got to totally change your idea of a punch.
And another thing that some people have varying degrees of difficulty with this, and I don't know if Punk will or does, but keeping your chin down. I mean, I remember when I was training, my coach was always like, keep your chin down, keep your chin down. And he would show me what would happen if I kept my chin up. And also, like, what's hard about that is keeping your chin down is something you have to constantly work on, because when you keep your chin down for the first 2 minutes, but let's say you hit somebody, you stun somebody with a left jab, you go in for the kill, and you start throwing lefts and rights, and as you get excited, you start forgetting about your fundamentals, your chin goes up, and it takes one whack to put you to sleep. Actually, Chuck Liddell's coach, John Hackelman, said the last 3 or 4 fights that Chuck Liddell lost, the reason he lost is because he didn't keep his chin down. And they said they drilled ad nauseum. They even put chains around his neck while sparring and while hitting the heavy bag to keep his chin down, and for whatever reason, he just can't do it. Some people can keep their chin down all day without even thinking about it. A lot of people can't. Some people are so good at striking, they don't have to worry about keeping their chin down because they really get tagged. So, I mean, that's just one of the many, many things CM Punk is going to have to acclimate himself to, you know, to not twisting his wrist, you know, when he throws his punch, not telegraphing, you know, combinations, footwork. There's a lot that's going to go into that. Also not being flat-footed as much. But also, one thing about his jiu-jitsu, he's been training for quite a few years with Renner Gracie, one of the better Gracies as far as pure on-the-mat jiu-jitsu goes. But the thing is, when you join an MMA team, you can't really call your shots as far as who you're going to train with, who you're not going to train with. You can't bring your own coaches into a particular gym. Like, you can't just go and say, oh, even though John Smith is the team's official jiu-jitsu coach, I'm bringing in Renner Gracie. You can't do that. Because that's a team. Now, you can bring in certain strength and conditioning coaches if you want to, but you can't bring in. Plus, Renner Gracie trains in California. So it's not like Punk's going to have the luxury to bring Renner Gracie to Rufus Sport in Wisconsin, wherever he wants to. So he's going to be learning jiu-jitsu from an entirely different individual.
And that could certainly show him, that could take care of, like, if there are any holes that Gracie didn't see or address. You've got a different set of eyes looking in there, so they could fix those holes. So, I mean, this could certainly be in his in his favor, switching coaches like this.
But you also got to remember, too, all the times that, and this should be assuming, but all the times that CM Punk has been training in jiu-jitsu, it really hasn't been like MMA jiu-jitsu, it's been jiu-jitsu for jiu-jitsu. He's going to be training jiu-jitsu now for MMA, because whenever you come into mixed martial arts with a particular specialty, and then you go, and then you decide, I'm going to fight full-time, you have to change your game, because there are certain things you can't do. Like, for example, with as a boxer, a boxer can't afford to be flat-footed because you don't have to worry about being taken down. In MMA, you cannot be flat-footed. Boxers punch all the way through with their punches because, again, they don't have to worry about taking down. You can't really do that in MMA because you get taken down in a heartbeat. So, and there's a lot of, and there are things with wrestling that you cannot apply to MMA. There are things with jiu-jitsu you cannot apply to MMA. That's why there are a lot of people, like Tito Ortiz, for example, you know, not a bad amateur wrestler by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not a highly decorated or credentialed amateur wrestler. But the reason he was so successful with his wrestling, because the applications that you make, you change from the mat to the octagon, Tito did that better than most. Like, Frank Mir is not a highly decorated jiu-jitsu guy. Like, when you think of the world-class jiu-jitsu guys like Jacare, you know, like Robert Drysdale, like, you know, the Gracies, Frank Mir is not in that category. But when you take out the mat game and put in the octagon game, Frank Mir is one of the best. And maybe that will be CM Punk, you know, not a credentialed, highly credentialed jiu-jitsu guy, but he might be able to pick up on the MMA version of jiu-jitsu, if you will, because he's going to be training with no gi.
Oh, yeah, you can't train in a gi if you're not going to fight in it. I don't have the training that you did. I've dabbled here and there. I took kickboxing up for a little while before I got into professional wrestling, and I've bounced a couple martial arts here and there, and I know that there are attacks and stuff that are specifically geared towards using the gi. So in a case like mixed martial arts, you don't wear a gi, you don't wear anything more than, you know, your board shorts, really. Except for that guy who wears the really small Speedos and shaves an arrow into his chest, but I don't even know if he's still fighting. If you remember who I'm talking about.
I'm trying to. It escapes me right now, but I can picture the individual.
Yeah, believe me. Once you've seen him, you won't forget him. It's a totally different world.
Now, also, you brought up how Nate Diaz made the virgin nose comment. I guarantee you, as CM Punk gets to the thick of things, he's not going to have a virgin nose for long, because there are at some points when you train, because I did a lot of boxing training when I was younger, and I remember, you know, for the first few months, you know, I was, you know, doing good with the drills and everything else, and, you know, my mitt work, it looked decent, but then at some point, instead of training with guys that are your equal as far as skill level and experience, eventually your coach wants to see, okay, what does he really have? And they're going to put you in with a guy that's a lot more experienced, and they're not going to say, oh, kill him, but they're going to say, tag him with a few good ones to see how he reacts. And they have some of the most talented strikers and striking coaches. I mean, to learn the art of striking as far as kickboxing and MMA, he could have gone to a better place. And someone is, he's going to have that training session when someone is going to blast him the next week, and they're going to see how he recovers.
Oh, yeah.
So that virgin nose is not going to remain that way for long.
I mean, in all honesty, if you take a look at it, it looks like it has been broken before, but I'm not going to call out Nate Diaz on something like that.
I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, the world's going to be watching when the UFC announces CM Punk's, you know, debut in the octagon, and I hope it's the Green Ranger. It won't be, but I hope it is, because that fight would get so much attention. But I think the UFC would be scared to make that fight happen, because CM Punk fighting in the UFC is already enough of a spectacle, and to bring in Jason David Frank would make it even more of a spectacle. But at the same time, I mean, that guy, you know, that has the, you know, that he has the record and experience they're looking for.
Yeah, but if he was really that good, then he would be in the UFC.
You could say the same about CM Punk.
Oh, no, oh, no. But you see, I can understand CM Punk is attached to millions of wrestling fans. Jason David Frank is holding on to a TV show from over 20 years ago that has not retained the popularity as when he was part of it. He doesn't have, you know, I would
disagree with that.
I mean, I don't think you could make the money with him that you can with CM Punk.
Well, no, I'm saying together, fighting together, because there are going to be a lot of fans who normally don't order the UFC on a regular basis that are going to order that because of CM Punk. If you have the Green Ranger fighting, and you find out, okay, he's fighting CM Punk, there are going to be people, even more people that don't normally, there are going to be people that don't watch wrestling or UFC that go, I'm ordering this.
Yeah.
Because the geek community, if you will, I hate calling the geek community, but the pop culture community is huge. And nostalgia is running wild right now. And I'm telling you, like, CM Punk versus Jason David Frank would be covered by more websites than any other fight imaginable. It wouldn't be just ESPN. It wouldn't be just the MMA media. It would be like the pop culture media covering that fight.
Yeah, but I don't think... I mean, for one, I don't think Dana White wants the Nerdist to be covering UFC. And
oh, he doesn't. Dana White doesn't care about that.
Well,
whoever's covered the UFC, that dude's happy.
But I know that he would be afraid that. I mean, such a thing. I mean, you don't want to take away from the seriousness of the sport. And I mean, this just having that kind of a. I could see where it just wouldn't be. You know, where, yes, would it get some more buys? Yeah, probably. But you'd have a lot more detractors saying, hey, this is like a pro wrestling type match. You got your pro wrestler, you've got your TV karate guy. You know, are they even going to have a legitimate fight? I mean, I can see where Dana White would be very hesitant to pull something like this.
Oh, no, I mean, the hesitation is well-founded. I mean, I'm just saying, as the guy who likes, you know, comics, who likes most things pop culture, I would love to see this fight because, you know, take away all the outside elements that goes along with selecting Jason David Frank as your opponent for CM Punk. They want a guy that has maybe one or two professional fights. Jason David Frank has that. He's a guy that's in shape, and the thing is, Jason David Frank fights at 170, and even though Punk's thinking 185, I don't see Punk fighting at 185. I think 170 is going to be his weight. I really do. Because he's not a very big guy, and as he's training, and he's not a muscular guy either, so when he fights and trains and loses weight, I could see him getting down to like maybe 195. And I don't see him being effective if he's really going to make this a career at 185. I think 170 is going to be, you know, his weight. And now, the cut to 170 is going to be a pain in the ass, but I think that's where he'll reap the most benefits.
Well, it certainly makes for an interesting time in the world of mixed martial arts.
We keep it locked here to Gerwick.net. As soon as that fight's announced later in 2015... we'll be covering it. I mean, I'm sure I'll be writing a column about it. Jason will be talking about it on any of his projects he has going on. But Jason, let me ask you a question.
Go for it.
Are you watching New Japan Pro Wrestling Global Force Wrestling's Wrestling Kingdom 9 pay-per-view?
If I wasn't going away on a trip that weekend, I probably would.
I don't know if I'm watching it. And I say that because The card from top to bottom looks to be amazing. I'm just saying because I want to watch it live. And last year was the first year I ever watched the Tokyo Dome show live. Now, I'm a casual New Japan Pro Wrestling fan. I've been getting more and more into New Japan, but for years I've always watched the Tokyo Dome shows. I always tape-traded or DVD-traded the Tokyo Dome show, and I watched it usually a week or two after it aired. Last year was the first time I got to watch it live because it was available on Ustream. I watched Japanese feed. It was awesome. I enjoyed it very much. I was into it. I never found myself looking at my watch saying, please end. I was into it from beginning to end. And I planned on watching, ordering on pay-per-view and watching with Jim Ross and Matt Stryker doing the commentary. But it's been announced that a lot of cable systems are actually not going to show it live at 2 in the morning because the UFC Jones versus Cormier pay-per-view is going to be on replay at the same time. So cable companies have pretty much said, you know, we'll make more money with people ordering the Jones versus Cormier replay, so we're not going to air Wrestle Kingdom. All the cable companies are going to air the Wrestle Kingdom show at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, you know, on that day, but not going to air it live. Dish Network and DirecTV will be airing the show live at 2 a.m. I'm actually on Global Force Wrestling's website now. Dish Network and DirecTV will be airing it live at 2 a.m. In Canada, on Bell TV, Rogers, Shaw, and Scastel, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, they'll be showing it at 2 a.m.
Plus, I think they have their own app that is going to be showing it live that you can get it for your tablet or smartphone as well.
There's actually a I'm actually reading right now. It's the Flips app,
yes.
FLIPPS. It's available worldwide with the exception of Japan. You can download it with either iTunes or Google Play, but I don't want to watch it on my phone.
No. I've got the WWE app. I've got it for my phone. I got it for my tablets. I got it for my PlayStations, and I rarely watch it. I never watch it on the phone. I rarely do that. I watch it on the tablet if I've gone out and to a place where there's Wi-Fi. But I primarily watch it through my PlayStation.
But the Flips app, you can order the show and watch the American version live. But I don't want to watch it on my tablet or mobile phone. But also, if you have a smart TV, that's by Samsung, Sony, Panasonic, LG, Philips, and Sharp, you could also watch it if it's connected to a smart TV, but also if you have Xbox One, Xbox 360, the Dish Hopper, Apple TV, or Chromecast, which is Google's streaming device, you can also watch on the Flips app. So me, I have Xbox Live through Xbox 360, so I will be I think I'm going to be watching it with the Flips app through Xbox 360 at 2 a.m. live. Now, I'm nervous about that because the thing is, most people would say, Atlee, why don't you watch the 7 p.m. show? You can get some sleep after UFC Jones vs. Cormier, blah, 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 blah. Well, I have no self-control when it comes to spoilers. I'm in contact with a bunch of people, and I know at some point I will stumble across a spoiler of what happens, and then I won't want to watch it because New Japan Wrestling Kingdom 9 is a show I want to watch live, or I want to watch without knowing what happened. Plus, I could just go to a site and watch the Japanese version. I could also, with New Japan World, their streaming service, I could easily pay $9.99 and watch that, and that's the Japanese version, but I really want to see and hear Jim Ross call a wrestling show again. And what I mean is an actual wrestling show, because wrestling is the main focus of the product, not storyline per se, but wrestling. And there's going to be no producer in Jim Ross's ear yelling at him saying, call this, call that. No, don't say this. No, don't say that. Jim Ross can call this exactly as he sees it, and also he's going to be explaining storylines because I don't speak Japanese. I don't know a lot of the storylines. I know some of them. I don't know all of them, and Jim Ross can break it down for you in a way that will just be fantastic. I want to see the American feed. And I think I'll be watching this on Xbox 360.
Well, one of the reasons why I would even consider getting this show is because of Jim Ross. I honestly don't think that he would put his name to this if it wasn't going to be a good show. And to hear him without being produced, that's even a better reason to do it. My question, as far as the commentary team goes, it's been announced that Matt Stryker is going to be his color guy. Which Matt Stryker are we going to get? Are we going to get the guy who was on WWE CW that did a great job, or are we going to get the guy who on the Royal Rumble when Booker T came out, proclaimed himself as marking out at that moment, and not being professional during the situation.
I mean, Matt Stryker, that's the enigma that makes this either a hit or miss, makes this a hit or miss proposition, because there are a lot of other people that were in the running. John Pollock was in the running from the Fight Network. Mike Tenay, actually Jim Ross, asked TNA if Mike Tenay could do it in exchange for plugging TNA. He actually called John Gerberic and asked, tried to broker a deal where Mike Tenay could do the commentary, and TNA didn't want it to happen, which was kind of dumb on their part, but hey.
They just relieved him of his duties, so I mean, I don't see why that, what the issue was.
And plus, I mean, you need all the publicity, all the pub you can get right now, and, you know, having another promotion plug your stuff, you know, you can't go wrong there. And also, there were even, if you go to Cage Side Seats, there's even talk of Dave Meltzer being asked to do the commentary for this. Some people were putting Dave Meltzer's journalistic integrity into question if he took the gig. That's a whole other ball of wax, you know, but ultimately they went with Matt Stryker. And Matt Stryker, his commentary, sometimes it's really, really good.
Sometimes it's really, really bad.
Oh, yeah, but when it's good, it's good, but when it's bad, it's so bad. Like, for example, I remember a couple of years ago on SmackDown when him and Booker T were the commentators, and they piped Jericho versus Undertaker first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
As Undertaker was making his entrance, and he stands on the steel steps when he gets to the ring and raises his arms for the house light to go up.
Mm-hmm.
As he was doing that, I kid you not, Matt Stryker said, "The Undertaker is breaking dawn as we are in the twilight of a new moon here in the world in WWE." And I was like, okay. Undertaker is breaking dawn as we are in the twilight of a new moon.
Oh, I would have fired him there.
What movie do you think he got that from? Breaking Dawn, New Moon, Twilight.
Oh, yeah, the Twilight trilogy there.
I don't want to be thinking of sparkling vampires when I'm watching Jericho versus Undertaker on SmackDown.
No.
I know it's a pop culture reference. I know he's trying to reach another audience, but no, like, things like that just really irked me. And he's been doing decent work on Lucha Underground with Vampiro. Now, Vampiro just sucks as a commentator, and I hope he's horrible. But Matt Stryker is doing a decent job with Lucha Underground, but it seems like every other episode he mentions, this is what pro wrestling is really about. These are things I'm actually allowed to talk about, and I hope he doesn't bring any sort of political agenda in the Wrestling Kingdom 9.
Well, that could be something that he... that sounds like something he may have been produced to say.
He might have been, but I hope they just... You know what? Forget about WWE. We know where you came from. Forget about trying to talk about how this is real pro wrestling and WWE is the only entertainment now. Just really talk about the show. I mean, the top three matches, Nakamura versus Kota Ibushi, or Ibushi for the Intercontinental title, that's a pretty good story, because Ibushi, I'm maybe butchering his name, I'm not good with the Japanese names, but he was a former junior heavyweight champion, now he's moving to heavyweight, he's taking on Nakamura, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and of course you got Hiroshi Tanahashi defending the IWGP heavyweight belt against Okada, and this is like top rivalry in New Japan right now, you know, and of course you got AJ Styles wrestling. So it's just so much. There's a lot of good stuff happening on this card. I can't wait to see what happens.
Now, I've been listening to Jim Ross. I also follow his podcast. I listen to that every week. Jeff Jarrett has been making the rounds. He did Jim Ross's podcast. He was interviewed by Mike Johnson on Pro Wrestling Insider. From the way that the show has been described, we're talking several different styles, and I'm not trying to make a pun on AJ. Several different styles are going to be on this show. We're not going to be inundated. Like for example, we watch Raw. We get the WWE style we get the WWE style all 3 hours. We watch Impact Wrestling. We get the Impact Wrestling style for those 2 hours. This is going to have several, there's 10 matches on the show, there's going to be up to 10 different styles of wrestling on this show. And that alone, when it's described like that, I want to see that.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, come January 4th at Wrestle Kingdom. Hopefully I can watch it live. If I can't watch it live, hopefully I can watch, I can be spoiler-free for the next 12 hours. But I encourage anyone who hasn't given Japanese wrestling a try to watch this show, because this is really New Japan Pro Wrestling's WrestleMania. If there's one Japanese wrestling show you're going to watch throughout the year, this is it. And when you get Jim Ross and Matt Stryker kind of giving you the introduction and an English introduction of New Japan and what they bring, I think it's a I don't think this is a show you can miss.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I'm gonna see if I can catch it a little later down the line. This weekend I'm going off. I'm going to see an MMA show that's being headlined actually by former UFC champion Tim Sylvia. So at the Mohegan Sun down in Connecticut. But yeah, this is going to be definitely something that I'm definitely going to be looking into within a few days after.
Well, Jason, it's main event time here at the Body Slam Podcast. We're going to talk about our segments. Next topic is going to be kind of talking about what we want to see in 2015. What do we think we're going to see? Who's going to be pushed? Who's not going to be pushed? And I'm going to start it off with one simple question. Is Roman Reigns the guy?
Not yet. He's en route. I think that being out for the 2 or 3 months that he was out with the hernia surgery, I think that hurt him. His biggest problem right now is his promos. He's not connecting with the crowd on the mic. I think 2016 or 2017 will be his year, but I don't think 2015 will be.
I completely agree with you, Jason. They need to give Roman Reigns a lot more time to develop, and I don't think he is going to be where they need to be come March 31st for WrestleMania 31. And the match he had with Seth Rollins, that just told me on Raw this past Monday, that told me right there he is not ready to be the guy, not just the next world champion, but the guy. I mean, the plan looks to be him and Lesnar one-on-one for the belt at Mania on top. I don't think that's going to happen because he's not ready.
No.
He is not ready. Now, I know WWE has an ego when it comes to their plans and what they want to do, and they thought for some reason that Orton versus Batista was going to be this million-dollar program, which wasn't the case, and they had to throw Daniel Bryan in there. And I don't think they want to be told 2 years in a row, hey, your plan sucks, this is what you really need to do. But there's a few differences between Batista and Daniel Bryan, because number one, Batista, whoever named from the past they brought back to take Daniel Bryan's spot was going to get booed. But with Daniel Bryan being out and kind of a question mark as who the number one guy right now is, I think fans want it to be, they like Roman Reigns, they want him to be the guy, but they don't feel he's there yet. I think you could hear it because people don't sit on their hands when Roman Reigns comes out, but they're not like, yes, we got to see him. They're not overly enthusiastic either. I think they like him. I think they want to see what happens with him, but he's just not ready for the main event spotlight.
I mean, I think right now a good portion of what keeps Roman Reigns as a top babyface, I think, is his entrance. You've got people like, remember the Sandman? If you were to take away the Sandman's entrance, would he have been as popular for as long as he was? I think if they were to have him start coming through the doorway, the normal ramp, as opposed to the crowd, he may not be. You may not have the fans hit their feet like they do. So I don't think that he. Yeah, he's just he's on the cusp.
And plus, I think presentation-wise, gear-wise, I think he's still living in the past to a degree, because the Shield's broken up, and
He's still pretty much heel gear.
Dean Ambrose has moved on. Seth Rollins has moved on. Different that look, different entrance. Roman Reigns is still like, no, man, he's wait. It seems like he's looking for that Shield reunion. Now
he's got the music, he's got the gear.
No, after a major group broke up, there's only one wrestler that made that kept the look and made it work. And that's Bret Hart.
Well, it's because he started the look.
Exactly. So, I mean, he's the exception to the rule. But I think the fans really like Roman Reigns, and they think this is a big, powerful guy. He has a few cool moves. He has a good look. He's athletic.
Well,
because, I think the fans, you know, after 10 years of Cena, they're not just ready for somebody else, but they're ready for that next. They're not just ready for a new babyface. I think they're ready. They want an ass-kicking babyface.
Well, Roman Reigns has a lot of things going for him in the fact that he is an ass-kicker. I think they should keep. I fully believe that, you know, they should, that punches should still be illegal. But as long as they're going to keep going, I think the Superman punch should be his finish, not the spear. But he is, from what I have been told, he is a nice-looking gentleman, which will get the women interested in him. I like the soft-spoken part because, you know, you've got that silent killer that that can get the guys interested in him. And, you know, he does have what I call the Sid charisma. What I mean by that, Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, whatever you call him, was not the greatest wrestler in the world. In fact, he makes Hulk Hogan look like Luthez. But he had such a natural charisma, you could not help but jump to your feet when he walked through the curtain. Roman Reigns has that. I see that.
I mean, the thing is, we're not saying that. I mean, I'm not saying, I'm sure you're not saying that Roman Reigns sucks.
Oh, No, not at all.
He's coming along. He has improved dramatically since he made his debut in the main roster, and he's getting better. He's only going to get better. He has shown that he has an aptitude for this business, but he's not ready for primetime main event billboard name on the marquee. He's not ready for that yet, and he won't be by WrestleMania 31.
Oh, no.
So the question becomes, what main event WrestleMania? Now, in my opinion, with Brock leaving, it looks like he's going back to the UFC or Bellator, depending on how much money Viacom wants to give him. John Cena's getting that belt back at the Royal Rumble. I shouldn't say that. I say Brock Lesnar is losing. I'm calling it right now. Brock Lesnar drops the title at the Royal Rumble, whether it's to John Cena or Rollins hits the curb stomp.
Or maybe we'll have a double change and have Cena take it only to get curb stomped.
But here's my thing, though. This may not...
For the record, I hate the idea of anyone coming close to Ric Flair's 16 title.
Right? Well, the thing is, Cena is a 15-time world champion right now, and I guarantee you, this decision will not have 1 ounce of influence on whether or not they do the double change at the Royal Rumble. But do you really want Cena's 16th world title being this interchangeable deal?
Oh, I don't want Cena to see a 16th title.
He's breaking the record, in my opinion.
He's gonna break
that record.
In all honesty, he can break the record, but he'll never break the record. One of Ric Flair's title reigns, I think it was like maybe his third or fourth, is the length of time of that one title reign is probably longer than than 8 of Cena's reigns combined.
Oh, yeah.
So, even though he'll have the numbers, he won't have the numbers, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I feel you. I absolutely do.
I don't like the idea of putting him in the same breath as Ric Flair. And, yeah, I hate to see...
But I guarantee you, when that booking meeting happens and they decide, hey, if WWE Creative says, hey, let's do a double change, no one's going to say, whoa, should we have... No one's going to put that Ric Flair thing into account, and I don't think they should, but I don't want to see a double change. I think have Rollins come with the briefcase, cash it in, because I guarantee you, Rollins can't have a bad match right now. He is on fire, and
he just needs to win a couple.
Oh yeah, and I think maybe that puts him over the edge as far as being the top heel in the company. Now I'm sure when Randy Orton comes back, that's where he's gonna be working with. So I hope they don't think, hey, Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins, if Seth Rollins cashes in, is gonna be the main event of WrestleMania. But here's my scenario: we got Daniel Bryan in the Royal Rumble, we got Roman Reigns in the Royal Rumble, and usually whenever they hype the Royal Rumble match, they hype up two or three people that have a chance of winning it, and then everybody else is kind of, you know, whatever. They surprise us one year with Sheamus, but usually they always hype it around two or three guys.
There's usually, for every Royal Rumble, there's the Monster, the Iron Man, and the guy who goes out the quick.
Usually. Now, here's my question. After seeing Daniel Bryan's reaction this past Monday on Raw from the fans, do you have Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns as the final two in the Rumble?
I would want to know exactly what Daniel Bryan's health condition is.
Well, let's say they're not worried about it, and it's 100%, because I would have to think they wouldn't put him in the situation if he wasn't 100% ready to go. So if we take that out of the equation.
All right. If we take that out of the equation, I would have, as the final three, I could see Reigns, I could see Bryan, and I could see Dolph.
Okay.
That is who I would have. I would be hesitant to do Bryan, because I don't know how, with him being out for almost a year, you know, how much has he lost as far as fans go? Is the yes chant enough to sustain him to another possible WrestleMania victory? I don't know how I would go on that. I would lean towards what I would do, from looking at the roster, looking at the crowd reactions, I would have, if I could 100% trust Brock Lesnar, I would have WrestleMania 31 main event be Dolph Ziggler versus Brock Lesnar, WWE World Championship versus the WWE Intercontinental Championship, first time that's been done since WrestleMania 6. I would go with that as our main event.
I mean, it's definitely an intriguing option, but I don't. If Brock's leaving the UFC, leaving WWE for UFC,
it'd be hard to pull off.
They're not going to have him be the champion on his very last day in the contract. That's just not how WWE operates. Not happening.
You don't want another Goldberg versus Lesnar WrestleMania 20.
That too. I mean, even if he's in the main event and not the champion, it's the same thing. People aren't going to be into it because they know he's leaving.
Well, could you then, would it be big enough, or would you maybe throw in a special guest referee? Would you have Rollins versus Dolph title for title?
You know, I mean, another option.
The one thing that would save that is the title for title gimmick.
I don't know. The way the IC title has been portrayed lately, maybe not, but if they kind of heighten its value to a certain extent, it could work. But going back to the Royal Rumble for a second, the reason I was asking you the question about the final two, final three, is because if the final two comes, because clearly right now at the Raw, that the fans are more than Daniel Bryan than they are Roman Reigns right now.
Yes.
So if they do a deal where the final two is Reigns and Bryan, and Reigns eliminates Bryan to win the Rumble,
he could turn heel right there.
He will be a heel.
Yeah.
He will be a heel. It'll be Batista all over again. You cannot have that. It's the last thing people see in the 2015 Royal Rumble is Roman Reigns throwing out Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, it
cannot be. And I don't think they're going to go with a Rollins, Reigns type deal. Plus, you can remember too, Fastlane's happening in February. They're taking out Elimination Chamber. It's going to be Fastlane. So we don't know if they're going to do any type of stipulation that gets somebody a second chance at a world title match at WrestleMania. We don't know. I mean, it could be a totally new gimmick match. We don't really know.
Yeah, Fastlane, you know, we have to see what exactly they're planning, whether it's just another, just a regular show, or if there's going to be a gimmick attached, or if it's going to be the Royal Rumble winner putting his title shot on the line. I wouldn't be against moving the stipulation out of the Royal Rumble for the winner of the Royal Rumble to be the automatic number one contender for WrestleMania. And then have something at Fastlane in order to make that distinction.
Now, Jason, just thinking about like possibilities, main event possibilities for WrestleMania, is the world title match. Not in the main event necessarily, but the world title match. Does Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins intrigue you?
Yes and no. Again, I just can't get it out of my head. I just don't know how fragile Daniel Bryan is. And Seth Rollins, he needs some wins. He needs to beat Cena. He needs to beat Orton. He's got to do it without his stooges. Yeah, he's just not. He's a pain in the backside, but he is. But he's not. I don't see him as a Triple H level heel.
Okay, another scenario for WrestleMania would be you go with the safe bet. You go with the formula that's been carrying you for a while now. John Cena goes in as WWE champion for WrestleMania in the main event, leaves as WWE champion. Would that upset you if you knew that was the main event plan?
I hate that idea with a passion, but I can understand it. Where everything and everyone is built, I can understand why they would go that way, because there really is no – there's no I mean, we can also throw Rusev in there. We could have Rusev win the title – at the February show, and have him lose it to Cena at WrestleMania. I could sort of, you know, title versus streak or what have you. I mean, I could sort of see that. I mean, I'm sick of Cena. I respect him. I think he's a fantastic. I mean, he's not the greatest worker in the world, but he's charismatic. What he does outside of the ring should be lauded a lot more than it is, but I'm tired of him. He's been on top longer than Hogan was. He's on top longer than Austin, than Rock and Bret Hart combined. I'm ready for a new hero. I'm ready for a Dolph Ziggler or a Daniel Bryan to step up and to take the reins as the top guy. I don't want to see Cena in that main event.
I mean, the bottom line is WrestleMania is a business, so you got to put in what's going to make the most revenue, drive the most pay-per-view buys. I don't think Roman Reigns is ready for that. But also, if you just think about a Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar match, you need someone that can carry Roman Reigns.
Let me throw an idea out to you.
Let me finish. You need someone that can carry Roman Reigns right now where he's at. Brock Lesnar's not carrying anybody.
Oh, no.
And the only way you make Roman Reigns the guy at WrestleMania, if he was still getting over, was 3-minute match, knocks Lesnar out the Superman punch, spear, Superman punch, 1, 2, 3. That's the only way you could do it. And I don't think that would be a very satisfying main event.
No.
So, I don't think that's the right formula.
Well, let me throw an idea, because I got two ideas, one of which won't work because we're assuming Lesnar is leaving, and I turn Lesnar babyface, Lesnar versus Rusev, title for title, but you'd have to put Lesnar over, and that's not happening. But how about this? Reigns versus Rollins versus Ambrose in a triple threat elimination match for the title.
That would be great, because if you still are hell bent on putting the belt on Roose, on Reigns, and crowning him as the guy. You have two guys that know him. You have two guys.
You have three strong possibilities for world champion.
You have, three possibilities. I'd say if they do that, you somehow you have Rollins going in as champion.
Oh yeah.
So you can be, because he's slowly becoming a heat magnet, and I really think that dynamic with Rollins as champion, you know, it would really have the Shield story come full circle. I mean, the Shield has been one of the best acts to be seen in a long time, and then if you had the three of them main events in WrestleMania, normally I do not want a triple threat four way, five way, six way, million way matches at WrestleMania main events, but I think there'll be a great exception if it's those three, considering their past.
That would be a rare exception. I agree. The main event of WrestleMania should be a one-on-one match. Last year was a much-needed exception. That was a correction exception. But this one, where it's all three members of the former Shield, I think that this would be it would be a hell of a match, especially if you make it no disqualification, which most triple threat matches are. For the title, I think it could be a selling point. I think it could be a good title match, and I'd put it on Ambrose. I'd have Ambrose go over.
I mean, if WrestleMania, some people might complain about the fact that last year's WrestleMania was a triple threat, so 2 years in a row getting a triple threat. But again, I think the fact that there's a story with all three of these guys, their stories are interlinked. Their stories are always, their careers will always be interlinked as far as WWE TV goes. And I just think that, you know, it will just create such a buzz and such a dynamic that, you know, the story's already written for you. It's already written for you. And as far as what do you do with Daniel Bryan? You know what? You want to capitalize on him? Have him go over on Brock Lesnar on the way out as Lesnar goes back to the UFC.
Oh, that'd be a fan. I'd love to see that match.
I mean, that was the plan for SummerSlam, but Daniel Bryan got hurt, so you can have the match now. You know, but we could talk WrestleMania all day. It's going to be, you know, fun to see what goes down in 2015.
Well, we could talk WrestleMania till WrestleMania.
Absolutely. But before we wrap the show, I do want to tell everybody that's been listening that this is going to be the last episode of the Body Slam podcast here at GoRick.net. It's not a decision that came too lightly, but there were a few things that came into play when I made my decision. You know, they say life kind of gets in the way sometimes when you're trying to reach certain endeavors and go for certain goals, and you know, it's the things that have gotten in the way have been positives. And by the end of the day, when you set out to do something, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a column, whether it's whatever you want, at some point you have to sit back and look at it and go, is this really how you envision it? You know, are you still the right person to be running a podcast? Is this still what you wanted? Are you getting everything out of it that you wanted to? And also, my other two, the hosts of the Body Slam podcast, you know, with Todd Graham and Shane Daly, you haven't heard them on the show in a while, and the things have changed in their personal lives as well. I mean, the three of us are still best of friends. We're always hanging out, talking wrestling, but it's hard and almost impossible to get the three of us in a room to do a podcast where we can hopefully entertain the readers of GoRick.net and others while we're talking about pro wrestling, which is something that we love and hold near and dear to our hearts. But I made the decision that this will be the very last episode. I definitely want to thank Steve Gerwick for allowing me to kind of paint on his canvas digitally as far as the podcast goes. If you guys are looking for wrestling audio content, definitely check out the Gerwick Report with him and Frank D. Mr. Jason Levante, I want to thank you for jumping on and kind of doing the last few episodes with me. It's been a real treat.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for allowing me into your playground. I've had so much fun doing this.
And also, and of course, I want to thank the fans. That have been listening to the Body Slam podcast as things have been happening throughout the show, the history of this show. I've got a lot of feedback from fans. You know, a lot of it's been good feedback, a lot of positive feedback, a lot of listeners. I've met some new Twitter friends, if you will, Facebook friends, just shooting the breeze about pro wrestling as a result of this show. I've actually made some contacts about, you know, as a result of doing this show. A lot of people within the industry, you know, have listened to the show, given me some great feedback, some great advice. They've give me a lot of compliments on the show. They like everything that we've been doing with this show. So we were like really like the first show to kind of jumpstart the Gerwick radio network, if you will, because we were the first podcast to be on Gerwick on a regular basis. Then Gerwick kind of did his own podcast, and now he has the very successful Gerwick Report with Frank D, which is a show you guys got to check out. But this is our, you know, this is our last episode.
Yeah.
But fair not, though. Jason has a podcast project that he has in the works, and I'm sure you'll hear more about it. I'll be still at Gerwick.net. I'll still be writing columns. I'll still be contributing to the site with results and news and whatnot. I'm hoping to get on the Gerwick Report podcast itself at some point. Excuse me. There's been a few times I was going to join Frank D and Steve Gerwick, but our schedules just are way on the opposite side of the spectrum, so I've not been able to get on their podcast. With my hope in the future, I can find some time where I can make myself available to be on their show. And you haven't heard the last of Atlee Green as far as doing a podcast. I may be joining somebody else's podcast in the future. I may be doing something else here at Gerwick.net. Just keep everything open. If you want, you can follow me on Twitter at Midnight Logic Go, or check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net.
Oh.
Jason, any final words?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this may be the last show, but this isn't the last you've heard of us. You know, as Atlee said, I've got a project I'm working on, and which I think will be very entertaining for all of you to listen to, and I certainly hope you do. We're going to be we'll have more information. Just keep an eye on Atlee's columns as we get closer to doing that. And of course, you know, I'm out there on the Twitterverse too. I'm at the Joker 1701. Certainly feel free to send off any if you got a podcast idea, I'll listen to it or read it or what have you, and you might see us on sooner than later.
Again, I mean, I just want to thank everybody that's helped me out with this podcast. I want to thank Steve once again for, you know, allowing me to do this podcast on his website. I want to say thank you to everybody, and I hope everybody has a very happy and safe New Year coming up. So long, suckers. Atlee Green, Jason Labonte, signing off.